Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the German Robles building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark, with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, the vampire. Well, good evening, everybody.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Phyllis. Welcome, everybody, back to the old podcast here. Trying to get back on schedule. Due to real life and unfortunate circumstances.
Surgery circumstances.
Yeah, put us a little behind. We had to do surgery on the lounge. No.
Surgery on the Phyllis, but I'm fine.
But she's doing great, and she's back here bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and maybe you ought to
hopping
shave
down
that.
The bunny trail? What?
But here, we'll probably have a couple podcasts put up going back-to-back here now, maybe. So
maybe, yeah.
We'll see. But tonight, this one is kind of cool. This is a little different. We're talking about the 1957 United Artists picture, The Vampire. Not to be confused with the Spanish movie released the same year called The Vampire, or El Vampiro. This one's kind of different, though. This one came out, like I said, 1957, and it came out, you know, around the same time. A lot of these, the Atomic Age movies, you know, Colossal Man and Earth versus the Spider and all the giant monster movies, but also along with those, like I Was a Teenage Werewolf, I Was a Teenage Frankenstein,
so
the
atomic
werewolf
stuff. It's scientific,
yeah.
Not
yeah,
supernatural.
Where scientific, where the reason for them being monsters is gone scientific instead of supernatural.
Right.
Like the good gothic horror Universal stuff and the Hammer stuff, which is kind of, you know, interesting because at the same time Hammer was making movies and it started up their horror cycle and they're still doing the gothic horror stuff, but the American films have gone scientific and atomic age, and they have a charm to them. I really like this era of film. They're a lot of fun. Most of them are, you know, really quick. They're short, 75-80 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
This one is about the same. I think it's like the same thing, like it's 75-78 minutes, something like that. But this one you don't hear about. You don't hear anybody ever mention this in the same breath that they do, you know, the teenage monster movies, or even if you go so far as like the werewolf. You hear more about the werewolf, the Stephen Rich one. I think I talked about that on a previous episode.
I had never heard of this one until now.
But you enjoyed it though, didn't you?
I did. I liked it. Yeah.
But
the copy we had was really clean.
Yeah,
very pretty.
It was the MGM Midnight Movies copy is the one that we watched here recently. But I do believe last year it was put out on Blu-ray, which would be, I'd like to get, because I really do like this movie.
Wow, well, the one we had was really nice. I'd like to see if it was any improvement to Blu-ray.
Yeah, and this one, like, you know, I think I said a minute ago, and of course I will repeat myself a dozen times.
Because you do.
Because, like I do. But this one really, to me, stands above those, just in the terms of the way it's shot, the cinematography, the camera choices, the mm-hmm. you know, the director made.
Yeah, there were some interesting angles and interesting
and it's,
panning.
It doesn't mm-hmm. move along in the typical way. The pacing is about the same, I guess. But I guess because of the camera choices and all, it makes it seem quite a bit different. And it starts out a little different. I love the opening scene. You know, the credits start to roll. The you know, light comes up and the credits start to roll. It's got this kid riding a bike, making a delivery through the credits, and then credits stop, and he goes in to deliver what he's going to, I think it's live rats.
It's a pet. Well, we don't know what it is.
Yeah,
it
I think
just
they
says
say later.
Any...
It's live rats for the doctor, because he's doing this experiment.
Yeah.
And he goes in and finds the doctor slumped over his desk, or the scientist, and he says, you know, oh, go get the doctor. And the kid says, yes, sir. And he runs out, and he goes to get the doctor, and the credits start back up again.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a little James Bond opening, a little prequel to what's going to happen. And that, I don't believe that was done much back then on any, and I don't
it's
remember.
Not very common from what I remember.
Yeah, so it was kind of a neat, it starts off, gives you a different feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the way it's going to go. Oh, another little side note, it was made by a little company called Gramercy Pictures, as released by United Artists, and they actually made another film the following year called The Return of Dracula. Same director, Paul Landreth, I think, directed both these films, and that one, we could probably talk about that one too at some point. It's another one that's kind of different, but it doesn't stand out like this one does. The strongest point in that one is the lead actor, Francis Litterer. I can't remember. His name's one of those that kind of drags on. He's interesting, but this one, you know, well, I'll tell you right now, I know exactly why, at least in my opinion, I know exactly why this movie isn't as fondly remembered as the rest of them, doesn't stand out.
Tell me, Rob.
I'll tell you. It's the creature.
Yeah.
The makeup. The movie's called The Vampire, and for all it's got going for it, which we'll talk about a little bit more here.
There's no vampire.
Yeah, they have little marks on their neck. But the guy doesn't look like a vampire in any stretch of the imagination.
No.
The makeup is just pedestrian, just substandard. There's nothing remarkable or distinctive or iconic looking to the creature. I mean, you look at like Teenage Frankenstein. That's a bold, iconic look.
Yeah.
Teenage Werewolf. He had his own unique werewolf look. He doesn't right. like the rest of them. You know, the amazing colossal man, World of the Colossal Beast, even Blood of Dracula.
Yeah.
As kind of goofy as that look, it was a very distinctive look.
Yeah.
This, the guy looks like just an old guy with a skin condition who had a stroke.
Well, you know,
and had big bushy eyebrows.
Right. I completely agree. And I cannot explain the eyebrows. So this is not going to explain the eyebrows. But I agree with you on maybe that's a reason why it wasn't as well known.
Yeah.
And I agree that the makeup is terrible. But I think what they were trying to do is, because this is a scientific thing, I think that look was supposed to be trying to kind of give you what was happening to his body. Because, you know, the pills that he was taking were, what was the term they kept using? Oh, I forgot the...
Well, something like cellular degeneration or something.
It wasn't cellular, though. It was something like cellular degeneration.
Yeah.
Anyway, essentially saying that it was like it was collapsing.
Oh, yeah. And eating the skin
It kind of like the, yes. So anyway, you get the idea. So it's supposed to be.
Well, yeah, I guess, but he would come away. It was like a Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
He didn't get that way and stay that way. You know, he would, after he took the pill, he would turn that way.
Right.
And then it would go away.
Well, that's why they tell you that you have to keep taking the pills.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't take the pills, that this happens. And I think, and I meant to talk to you about this before we started recording, but okay. I think the idea behind this vampire thing in the movie is that the pills, I don't even remember exactly what the experiment was, why they created these pills. It was supposed to be that you could...
What it was is the scientist was trying to see if people could be regressed to a more...
primitive state.
Primitive, stronger primitive state.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in the werewolf or in some of the or in Teenage Werewolf, so they could then
make them stronger
and
more
to be able to
soldier.
Deal with if there was an atomic war, atomic fallout.
Gotcha. So they were trying to develop a pill that could do that, and the pill that he created obviously did not exactly work, but it did kind of regress them somehow. It made them stronger and whatever, but it was almost as if it was, well, he did say it's addictive. Once you start taking
you have to keep taking it. Yeah.
And it has to be within 24 hours. If you don't take it within 24 hours, it would kill you.
Or something like that. You have withdrawals.
Right. And so I think that part of it was that you had to, obviously they drink blood, but they don't ever talk about them drinking blood, but there's. Yeah. But there's holes in the people's neck.
Yeah,
so I think they needed the blood to help somehow.
Well, yeah, they don't
so
really,
I'm
yeah.
a little confused
I don't think they
by
even
that.
Talk about that. Well, they were just using the vampire angle as a hook to get people in.
Well, I understand that, but I wish they would have explained what that had to do with the pills.
That's what I'm saying. That's why another reason why I think this one didn't really catch on is because
the
title is
a
vampire,
convoluted.
But there's nothing in it. It's a blood disease.
Yeah.
And the guy, there's puncture wounds on the neck, but you never see fangs.
Yeah.
The guy looks nothing like a vampire. Nothing is... Except the serum was derived from an extract from vampire bat's blood.
Yeah.
That's the only connection.
Well,
in
and
the
that's
movie.
Why I was trying to put it together that maybe they were trying to insinuate that he needed the blood to replenish whatever the pills did to his. I don't know.
Unless we missed it.
I did not catch that anywhere, and I was trying to find it.
And another thing, when he bites the victims,
mm-hmm.
he transfers the blood disease and they instantly die. He doesn't. So
true. Well, you know, he must transfer it because when they dug up the one victim.
And she had degenerated.
She had only been dead
decayed.
For, 3 days, I think?
And it already decayed to almost
to
a skeleton. Yeah.
Except for the, you know, very lifelike eyes
were
completely.
And some, like parchment-like skin stretched on the skeleton. But so he didn't die, or as long as he took the pill. Well, actually, even not taking the pill, he wouldn't die. He would just be in extreme pain and have withdrawals.
Yeah.
So,
but then when he died, his skin went back to being normal.
Yeah. Well, you have to do that. They have to at the end, and you have to have a look. He's back.
Yeah,
moment,
he's back.
You
know? I don't know. I I can understand why.
That's kind of why it didn't catch on. Because the confusion.
Because there's a lot of
that.
Confusion and inconsistencies to the story.
But that being said, this movie was a turned out very quickly.
It
was made in 6 days.
Ah.
Okay, like a lot of them back then. And it wasn't made for you to think about. It was made for the drive-in circuit. It was made for kids to go see and sit in a car and make out with their girlfriends or boyfriends and to look up every now and again and get a jump scare.
Right.
That's what it was made for. And on that level, it does have a couple of nice little scares in it.
Yeah.
Not an intense jump scare. Not like House on Haunted Hill.
No.
Not like that one. That's one of the best jump scares in a low-budget movie ever. But for what it lacks in other areas, what it makes up for is atmosphere, mood, and acting.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised getting sucked into this because before we decided to do this on the podcast, I had it on in the background while I was working on some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to get sucked into it more than just casually, you know, because the interplay between the characters, you buy the relationships.
Oh, yeah, you totally do.
They do a really good job. It's not superficial like in a lot of them, where the boyfriend and the girlfriend are talking and you're like, okay, they're playing boyfriend and girlfriend. Or these guys are playing the parents of these people. No,
right.
You really buy into this relationship that this single father and his daughter, they really care about each other. She's looking after her dad. She's taking over the role of making the dinner and all that stuff. And that's what she does.
Yeah.
And that she's, you feel, and they love each other, and he thinks the world of his daughter.
The part I love about that is the entire role of his daughter in this film is exactly what you're talking about, because she's completely useless to the film.
Yeah.
She doesn't further the plot. She doesn't have anything to do with the pills or the science, nothing.
Yeah.
She's just there to develop his character and to develop the relationship there.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of characters in this movie like that.
Yeah, that's true.
They're in it. They're just quirky characters, and they have really nothing to do with the story so much.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other ones, at the beginning, when the first scientist dies and the company that he was working for sends in somebody else, in comes this other doctor, played by character actor Dabs Greer, who you've seen in everything. The Terror from Beyond Space, but tons of other things, and TV for years. He comes in, and he brings this other scientist with him, and this quirky beatnik guy with shades, and he even gives you some expository on this guy's backstory, which you don't need. It makes no difference to what he does in the movie or how he really acts that much. They could have said, oh yeah, he's just kind of a quirky guy. And that would have been enough.
Yeah, what was his name? Charles? Michael? It was something common, but anyway.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I liked him. He wore sunglasses at night.
Yeah, because he had his eyes were very sensitive because his parents got killed in a fire. And he had this condition and blah, 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 blah. And they go on and on. I'm like, I mean, it's neat because you get a little background on this character that you don't really need.
Mm.
And he is kind of a quirky character.
Yep.
And he doesn't last long in the movie. But it wouldn't have mattered who was in that role, really. For what he has to do,
mm-hmm.
It could have been just to any guy.
Yeah.
Could have been, a tall guy, short guy, fat guy, thin guy, blonde. Yeah. It had nothing to do. Could have been any ethnicity, it doesn't matter. But they went out of their way to have this quirky, memorable character in this nothing part.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool.
And the stuff that he did, they could have easily assigned that dialogue to the other scientist.
The doctor. Yeah, because he ends up kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They just needed a spacer person to lengthen the movie a bit.
Yeah.
And have another victim.
Yeah.
At that point. But the other relationships between the doctor,
mm-hmm.
John Beale is the actor who's the lead in it, between him and his nurse, receptionist nurse, is a very personable, friendly relationship. And you get the idea they care for each other. They've known each other for a little while, worked together.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's only worked there for a few weeks, but it seems like it must be longer that they've known each other. At least it feels that way. I don't know if that's true.
And it's not overly done.
Mm-hmm.
It's very casual, but it's real.
Yeah.
And that little quirky moment they have in the restaurant where the waiter's asking the doctor about his eye and then talking about his wife. And that's kind of a little light moment. And another thing, it didn't need to be there.
Nope.
As quirky as it is, it could have been anything else. It could have been, hey, doc, I got a pain in my back. Can I come see you next week? Or can you check on it? Yeah, come see me tomorrow. Okay. But it was something about his eye and his wife being sick and breathing on it. And it just went into a little more than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't. It wasn't too much.
No.
You know, it didn't go off track.
Normally when all of those things start happening in film, I tend to get annoyed with the side stuff.
Yeah. It's like they're trying too hard.
But I never felt that. Yeah, I never felt that with any of these in this movie.
Yeah, that didn't bother me at all either. And usually it would. Let's see, were there any of the other characters? And some of his patients. Each one had was very distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And a very distinctive quirky little thing about them.
Right.
But not quirky to make them a wacky character.
No.
You know, just to make them a unique individual.
Yeah, they all stood out in their own way.
Yeah. And even the ones that didn't, like his first patient, the first victim,
mm-hmm.
she really didn't have a quirky bit to her, but she was very unique and different from mm-hmm. the rest of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, distinct individuals, the cast. Okay, John Beale
right.
is the lead, who was fantastic. You feel his angst, mm-hmm. you know, almost in a Chaney Jr. kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't go over the top, but he does play it almost to the hilt, mm-hmm. you know. Dabs Greer, like I said earlier, who's been in tons of stuff. Paul Breniger,
mm-hmm.
who has been in tons of stuff, is I think he's the coroner in this, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, medical examiner, and he's been tons of Westerns, tons of TV and stuff. And then you got Kenneth Toby from The Thing from Another World and other stuff. He's the
cop, right?
The cop, yeah, mm-hmm. the detective. And there's another guy, I should have looked him up, I can't remember his name, but he's like one of the other policemen you see in the police station, I think at the very end. Another character actor who's been in tons of stuff over the years. So, you know, you got all these familiar faces showing up that you're like, oh, that guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, the more I think about it in this movie, it's like, why isn't this one talked about more? But on the surface level, there was nothing to attract it. Yeah. I mean, the creature didn't grab you and pull you in.
Yeah.
And that's what you needed in movies like this.
That's true. You know, and I'm backtracking just for a second. I said that the daughter's part in this movie was completely not driving the story at all, not driving the plot at all, but that's not completely true. If it weren't for her, we wouldn't have a movie, actually, because she's the one that mistakenly gave him the wrong pills.
That's true. She is the,
I mean,
the
they could have
to start
they it. Could have had
he
the
could
nurse
have done
do
it himself.
He could have done it himself or had the nurse do it,
because,
that's true.
Okay, let's back up a little. Let's go to
yes,
the plot. Okay.
Let's go there.
Because one thing, the doctor has migraines, and that's why he has to take the medicine. That's why he gets the wrong pill.
Yeah.
So he could have had him, when he had the migraine, could have reached in the wrong pocket and got the wrong pill.
Yeah.
But this adds a little more anguish, a little more angst to the story.
Yeah.
A little more human drama, I guess.
Right.
But like I said, it starts off with the doctor, the boy on the bicycle, you know, the delivery boy goes and gets the doctor, John mm-hmm. Beale. He comes, checks on the scientist.
The
scientist, and right as he's dying, he's telling him, oh, you know, the experiments, they have to keep going. It's the pills. They won't believe you. It's the pills. And he hands him the bottle of pills.
Right.
And I don't know if he absentmindedly puts them in his pocket or just puts them in his pocket or whatever. And the scientist dies right there.
Yep. Doctor goes back to his office.
Yeah, the doctor goes back to his office. I guess he calls the coroner or whatever and tells his nurse what was going on. And he starts to have his migraine right then, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he starts to feel really bad. He's having a migraine.
So he has seen one of his patients and he sends her home and says, would you mind coming in tomorrow? I'm having a migraine. I want to run more tests on you. We'll see you tomorrow. She says, sure, no problem. It's just, you know, anxiety, whatever. Yeah, and she's a heart patient.
Yeah.
She had a pre-existing condition. So the daughter comes in. He says, you know, dear, would you get me one of my pills? It's in my coat pocket, having one of my headaches. She brings him a pill. He takes it and lays down.
Mm-hmm. And then that night. Is the first victim.
Yeah.
And the first victim happens to be.
The heart patient.
The heart patient woman. That he sent home.
Yeah. He finds out the next day that she died in her sleep, but there's two little marks on her neck he sees. But he doesn't really think anything of it.
He said they could have been insect bites.
Could have been insect bites, yeah.
Right.
So the story goes on. This happens a few more times.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said earlier, they bring this other scientist in. And Dabs Greer, who brings the beatnik guy in, has known John Beale before. They were medical students together, roommates. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, buddy, hey, how you doing? Yeah, so they get along. The next night, it happens again. And he takes another pill.
Yeah, and he begins to get suspicious because he's talked to the scientist now. And you know, he knows what's going on with the experiment.
Well, they know a little bit. They still haven't found out exactly what it is, but they know a little bit more. Some of the other animals have died.
Right.
Except for the vampire bat.
Yes, he knows the animals have died, and he knows that the pills are addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's beginning to wonder. And then after the second victim, he starts to have flashbacks of
he sees their faces like in his dreams or something.
Yeah. So he doesn't remember killing anybody, but the people are dead and he has flashbacks of seeing the victims. So
the next one, this next one is the one of the coolest shots. Well, coming up anyway. He doesn't want to be alone this night because he's having these issues and anxiety and all. So he asks his nurse if she'll stay with him. She says, sure, you know. And she was going to go out to dinner with a cop, but he's got to go check on this other thing.
Yeah, which is another, like, side plot. You get the impression that the doctor is interested in the nurse as, you know, maybe interested in wanting to date her.
But not so much.
But not really, really pushing about it. But at the same point, he's trying to keep the cop away from her because he knows the cop would be interested in her. Yeah. So it was just a silly side
thing. Well, I don't know if he's trying to keep him away. I think that he was just being a dick, just being funny because they're buddies. Because the way he kind of laughs at, oh, yeah, no, my new nurse, she's big and fat and wears glasses.
And you wouldn't want her.
You
wouldn't like her.
And you wouldn't like her. And he says, oh, big and fat, huh? Ha ha. We need to talk, buddy, you know. So anyway, so the doctor and the nurse, they go out to dinner and he gets called away to do an emergency appendectomy at at 9 o'clock at night. So she goes on home. Now, this is the shot of her, the whole scene of her walking down the street, and all of a sudden there's some figure in the shadows down at the end of the block coming mm-hmm. towards her, chasing her. And the way the suspense is built with her running, trying to get away, and you never see the bad guy. You see the figure, but you don't see who or what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And with her coming up to the door and dropping her keys and trying to get in and getting in and shutting the door just as he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
That shot was fantastic.
It was really good.
It was head and shoulders above other movies of that time that came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I mean, go watch it right now. It was really that good. You know, and that's not the only shot like that. But that's the one that stands out the most. That caught my attention more than anything. I mean, it was right up there with something out of Halloween.
Sure.
I want to say, you know. And you didn't see, there's nothing like that in any other movies that were coming out that I can recall. Hey, if there was, and I'm missing it, drop us a line on the Phantasm After Dark Facebook page and let me know. Because if there is, I would love to see that movie.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
but you go back some recommendations.
Yeah, you go back and you watch Teenage Werewolf, Teenage Frankenstein, any of those that came out like this. And they're very cookie cutter card, but they're fun. They're fun, but cookie cutter cardboard the way they came out. And it's very unusual picture because of these things we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes, hell, I want to watch it again. It was really that enjoyable. It wasn't spectacular by any means, but it's a nice little atmospheric moody picture. And again, one of those atomic pictures where it comes out of the Gothic era. They set it in modern day, small little town mm-hmm. to where they don't have to build sets because it's low budget. You're using all location, you're using people's houses. And I think it was actually all shot on the same street. That's something I was reading.
Huh.
So where the street he's riding the bike down, mm-hmm. everything was shot on that street.
Yeah, well, you actually see the street sign in one of the shots. And I meant to remember what street it was because I was going to try and look it up, but I forgot. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you. But I can't say enough good things about this movie, though. I mean, really, and the more I think about it, the more I really like it.
Yeah. Well, I do like it a lot. It was very enjoyable. I was at no point bored. Mm-hmm. I was... Frustrated is not the right word, but I really wish I understood more about the science behind it or something because
we will watch it again.
Well, I don't think there's any answers. I don't think that they put it in there. Or if they did have an answer in the plot, they didn't film it or they cut it and nobody ever put it back in.
Here's something.
Okay.
Do you think this was, whether it's overtly or subtly, a commentary on drug addiction?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if it was intentional or not. Because
I think there was a thing around that time. There was a thing about pill addiction and all coming around.
Yeah.
This could have been a little morality play about that.
Sure, it could have been. Yeah.
Because that's a big thing in it. I mean, that's why he's the monster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty in your face if you wanted to look at it that way. Yeah. And I mean, well, even if you don't want to look at it that way, it's pretty obvious that it is. But yeah.
But it's not one of those that's so much in your face that it's a... you know, moral story about drug addiction masquerading as a monster picture.
No, it does what genre stories have done, good genre stories have done forever. And,
yeah, it's just in there, and if you catch it, you catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know?
Now, the reviews of this thing I was looking up are all over the board.
It doesn't surprise me at all.
Not all the reviews think the way that we do about it.
I'm not surprised.
Now, there are quite a few out there. There are quite a few out there, though, that are... think the same way and like this is really a standout picture and mm-hmm. talk about a lot of the things that we've talked about and how you know a lot of the good things about it, but there's the same reviews by peasants that that didn't quite get it and just view it as a low budget, quickie, not very good horror movie. And most of that, I think, is you're just turned off by the creature.
Yeah.
Because this needed more of an, if this movie had an iconic makeup in it, creature, mm-hmm. I think it would stand out a lot more.
Well, I mean, it
would catch people's attention. They pay, because you look at it and it's like, oh, this is going to be a piece of crap. Look at that lame monster. And they're just turned off to even paying attention to the rest of the movie.
Well, obviously the monster can make or break a film. Yeah. You know that. But at the same point, I can understand why the plot holes in the story could really turn people away. Because does frustrate me in a lot of cases. And that, but I understand that here. But
it frustrates you in a lot of cases, but it didn't frustrate you in this one.
No, it didn't. I really still enjoy it.
Because of the pacing and the way it's shot, it kept you interested the whole time.
Yeah,
it did. It's like, huh, what about that? Or you think about these things after the fact.
Yeah, more. I mean, I thought about it during the film, but not...
it didn't take you out of the film.
Not to the detriment of the film. Right? Yeah.
It didn't make you go, wait a minute, stop. What the hell is this?
Yeah, yeah.
You're like in some films do, you know. Right. Most modern films do.
Yeah.
You know, another interesting thing, that probably, too, didn't help this movie when it came out, is it was released on a double bill with The Monster That Challenged the World. Not a very good movie. That was one of the big mollusks that comes out of the ocean.
Oh, right.
and that's, you know, that's a perfect example of a quick, low-budget, throwaway movie. That should have been the B picture on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the lead picture on this bill.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, and that's another one. I mean, you know, if you're watching both these movies at the drive-in, if you went to see the movies, you might have left after this one, you know, before the vampire started. Or the first movie was so good, so you're just making out throughout the whole second movie, you know. It was never released by itself. And also, too, the way these movies were released regionally, if it didn't play very well, you know, the double bill, it might not have been released in the other markets. So that could have played a factor in it. You can get both versions of this on Amazon, I believe, right now. I think the Midnight Movies version is still available, the double bill with Return of Dracula, the other movie we're talking about, and the Blu-ray. But I think I'm going to put that Blu-ray on my wish list.
Okay.
Hint, hint, hint.
Well, your birthday's coming up.
That's right, yeah. I got a birthday coming up, folks. You can send cards and letters and presents, too. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm not kidding. Anyway. This would be interesting. Well, and I can't say that. I was going to say this would be interesting to see a remake of this, but it'd be total crap if they did it, because you couldn't.
Well, all the charm of what we like about it is what it would lose now.
Yeah. You'd have to get somebody to remake it with that in mind, you know, with not just take the plot.
Well,
because all they do nowadays, they just take the plot, the story. And remake
that. Or sometimes they don't.
Yeah, or sometimes they don't. Yeah. They just take the title. Yeah. Just the title. But this, it does have a lot of charm to it, and yeah, like I said before, I got to hand it to the individual actors in it and the believable relationships. It's like real people just kind of talking.
Yeah, they did a really good job.
You know?
Yeah.
It's more casual, I guess, than a lot of the other movies where, you know, they're kind of stiff.
Yeah.
I really do want to watch this again, the more we talk about it, I think. And really,
well, then put it on.
Yeah, maybe watch it tonight.
Okay.
Or, you know, tomorrow, because it's always night in the lounge. There's other scenes in this that are real suspenseful. A lot of things that I was reading in the reviews, they really talk about the last scene where the nurse is trying to keep the doctor from taking the pill. And that's actually pretty brutal back then.
Yeah.
Where they're in the office and then he pushes away and she comes back to him and he punches her,
He punches her.
And I was like, whoa, that made me sit up and take notice.
Yeah,
you know?
And he wasn't the monster yet. No, he was starting to freak.
Yeah,
but
he was freaking out and he was in pain and losing his self-control.
Yeah.
And he takes the pill and then he turns to the monster and then chases her out of the office into the woods and stuff.
Into like this ditch.
But that was pretty intense.
Yeah.
And like I said, a lot of the other reviews are talking about the scene and the chase through the woods and all that. And then when he's fighting with Kenneth Toby at the very end, and you don't know, is he going to get him? Because it's, you know, they're pretty tight right there. And that was good. That was really good.
Yeah.
My favorite, I think, is that where he's chasing the nurse down the street in the shadows and all. That's my favorite shot in the movie.
Yeah, I like that.
But this one was pretty good, too. And there's others in there that are just as good. But it was funny that most of the reviews, I read talk about that end more than they talk about the other scene.
As a good thing?
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, how well it was done and how much they enjoyed it. But like I said, that middle scene, I would stack up against any Carpenter shot.
Sure.
And
it was really well done.
I can't say I'd stack it up against any Hitchcock shot, but it had more of that kind of feel. You know, more of something from Psycho than from, you know, a low-budget atomic movie from the 50s, you know.
Right. And I will say that there was, at one point, I couldn't remember what year this was made.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember when CPR came out, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And I kept being very frustrated that he was just letting people die and never trying to revive them.
Oh, yeah.
But that's because there was no such thing as CPR yet.
Yeah, CPR didn't come out as a thing, really, until the 60s.
Yeah.
And not really this presented to the public until like 71.
Right, right.
And this takes place in 57, so
yes,
when the scientist passes
so
out
early.
And dies.
Yeah. I was like, wow, he's just dead, huh?
But then again, if it that would have served no purpose to the story. You know?
I know. It's not what I expect to see.
True. And it's not a quirky character thing.
Right.
You know, like some of these other things that make the story a little more interesting. Flesh out the characters.
I get it. It's just funny.
You expect to see him like, oh, she's going to let him die there, huh?
Yeah. It's ingrained into your mind now, you know, from our generation. When somebody dies, you don't just stand there and watch them die.
Well, and also you talk about the times. Yeah. Other things like the doctor and the nurse just sitting there lighting up smoking.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the restaurant smoking, for one thing, in the restaurant.
Plus, in the doctor's
office.
They're
a doctor and a nurse. Yeah,
they're
in
the doctor's
office.
Smoking.
Yeah, you know, but it's just, that's just the way the times was.
I know.
And that's the thing
about
a lot of these movies that you have to, you know, not this one particularly, but a lot of these movies from the 50s or 60s or 40s or whatever, and people, oh, they're quaint. Oh, they're you know, oh, they're crap or they're not good. You have to watch them in context of the time that they were made.
Yeah.
To really enjoy them. And if you look at this one in 1957, everything else that was going on, this is borders on like almost like an art house kind of movie.
Mm, yeah.
You know, with the characterizations and the way it's shot. And I'm going to lobby to bring this movie to the forefront of all these other movies because it's a throwaway movie. As far as in most people's eyes, I couldn't tell you a handful of people that I know that have seen this movie. Okay. I'm sure there are out there, but it's not one.
Say, of anybody, you would know people
have
seen it.
But see, that's the thing. Of the people that we know, I bet you a handful of them have seen it, and you never hear it spoken about. You never really see it written about in any monster books or anything.
Yeah.
Hardly. And it's quite good. Yeah, I would definitely. I mean, I love the Atomic Age stuff. You know, and I've done a couple of podcasts. We've done a couple on some of the other movies, the giant atomic monster movies and the teenage monster movies and the other stuff from this era. It's just fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is because the iconic look of the monsters, you know, they're fun to see on the screen.
Yeah, and this one really isn't.
And this one isn't. The monster is just, like I said
earlier. And you don't see much either.
And here's this scowl that makes him look like he had a stroke.
Yeah.
In addition to the makeup just looking like they just put latex on there and dabbed on some latex, some cotton, some bushy eyebrows, and painted them brown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really horrible.
Terrible.
It's lame is what it is. It's not even terrible. It's just lame.
Yeah.
It's like no thought at all went into what the creature was going to look like. So that kind of really pulls you out a little bit. But smartly, though, you don't see him that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. You know, the first couple of attacks is just you see the figure or the hands or the shadow. And you don't see him full on until once in the middle and then once kind of at the end, which is good because, you know, that kind of pulls you out of it. I mean, hell, even Monster on Campus, the Neanderthal monster looked a little better, you know, because they had more of a monster look.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, the story is a good little story and it moves along at a good pace.
It does. It was very entertaining.
And it's entertaining.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was
bottom
quick.
Line. So, two thumbs up.
Yeah. I agree.
Definitely try to see this movie if you can. I don't
Should
know
be
if it's
easy
on,
enough to find.
Yeah, I don't know if it's on YouTube or not. I mean, you can see it for free, but if it is, but I definitely would seek out this DVD and give it a watch, and hopefully it will become a favorite, like it is one of mine. It's going to the front of the Midnight Movies shelf now instead of in the back. Once again, easy to get. It's on Amazon, a couple bucks, you know, probably under $10 for the DVD. Blu-ray. And if you have seen this, have an opinion on it one way or the other, drop us a line on the Facebook page. You know, please do. I'd love to hear from you. Love to hear anybody else's opinion. And whether you love it or hate it, but especially if you love it. That'd be cool to hear. Or you can drop us a line at the Phantasmo After Dark email, phantasmoad@gmail.com. You know, or just on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page, like I said. Of course, I'll put up the trailer and as a bunch of pictures up and try not to put as many up of the monster. That's about it. I don't think I have anything else to say about this. I could just keep talking about how much I love it over and over again.
Yeah, what was the cop's name? Kenneth Toby?
Kenneth Toby's the character, yeah. Yeah, the actor.
So how does he relate to Planet of the Apes, Rob?
Oh, yeah, we got to do Planet of the Apes. All right.
Since you can't do that when you're by yourself, but yeah. I'm here now.
Okay, how does Kenneth Toby relate back to Planet of the Apes? Let's see. Because the world does indeed revolve around Planet of the Apes. That's what we're proving here.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done this in a while. Let's see. Kenneth Toby relating to Planet of the Apes. Well, if I knew more about Gunsmoke and all the actors that have ever been on Gunsmoke.
Probably everybody.
Yeah. Because Kenneth Toby was in The Thing from Another World. James Arness played The Thing from Another World. James Arness played Matt Dillon. And I'm sure somebody from Planet of the Apes was on Gunsmoke at one time.
But you don't know who, so
actually,
now you
I
have
do.
To go...
Actually, oh. I do. Actually, I do.
Okay.
Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
Okay, do it.
Okay, watch this. And this goes personal because it's somebody we know.
Oh, okay.
Kenneth Toby from this to Thing from Another World, James Arness, who was the Thing in mm-hmm. Thing from Another World, to Gunsmoke.
Mm-hmm.
Jacqueline Scott did an episode of Gunsmoke.
Okay.
Jacqueline Scott also played an ape on the TV show Planet of the Apes. Jackie Scott, a friend of the program, and who hopefully will get on here one time by a satellite. Yeah. So that's how.
Well, that
Kenneth
was really
Toby.
Fast.
Yeah.
Good job, Rob.
Ha ha. Ha ha.
Proven again.
That's right. The world evolves around Planet of the Apes. Always has. Always will. That's about all I got for this episode. Then, how about you?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening, everybody, and tune in next time for another fantastic episode. Good night, everybody.
Good night.